Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, the Save Our Local News campaign aims to bring back local news outlets for New Westminster, the Tri-Cities, and Burnaby. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby tells us more. And Where's Larry? Connecting the dots between past and present in Prince George's indie record retail scene. Ian Gregg at CIFA Radio in PG explains. Celebrating pride in the community and out in nature, Lauren McKenzie at CHLY in Nanaimo dives in. And Smithers is set to finally get a new library after nearly 20 years in the making. CICK News reports. I'm Dan Messick, and you're listening to The Scoop.
Reporting from New Westminster, BC, this is Danny Nesvarandi, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. On April 17th of this year, three local news publications, the Burnaby Now, Tri-City News, and the New West Record, all closed their doors. The parent company of these outlets, Glacier Media, cited financial challenges as the reason for these closures. Since then, the region, which consists of six separate municipalities, has been left lacking in local news coverage. This is something that four previous journalists of the now-closed Glacier Media publications are looking to change. In collaboration with media workers' union Unifor, on June 4th, 2025, a press conference was held at the Unifor Western Regional Office, where these four journalists, joined by the union, launched the Save Our Local News funding campaign. The current funding goal for the campaign is $100,000, which will be put towards creating a community-owned publication for residents of New Westminster, Burnaby, Port Coquitlam, Coquitlam, Balcarra, and Anmore.
This bold initiative aims to create a fresh, trusted, and reliable news publication in the growing communities of New Westminster, Burnaby, and the Tri-Cities. This grassroots project shows the tenacity and dedication of journalists who care about their communities and the work they produce. This is not just a fight against news deserts, this is a fight for democracy. Thousands of residents and organizations in the Tri-Cities, Burnaby, and New Westminster communities have lost access to their long-standing local news publications with the recent closures of the New Westminster Record, the Burnaby Now, and the Tri-City News. This project is one that puts communities over profits, and the co-op is asking the community to support this campaign, to support by fundraising, and fundraising starts now at savelocalnews.ca.
Later in the conference, Cornelia Naylor, previously a journalist with the Burnaby Now, had this to say on the importance of the Save Our Local News campaign.
The four reporters here today, Mario, Teresa McManus, and Janice Clue, and I represent more than 100 years of covering New West, Burnaby, and the Tri-Cities. We live in these communities too. Personally, it's broken my heart over the last 2 months to see what happens when communities lose their reliable source of local news. I was the Burnaby Now education reporter for 11 years. Just last week, the Burnaby School Board passed a budget that included $3.3 million in cuts to local schools. With the Now shut down, however, there was no one at that four-hour meeting to report on what concerned citizens lined up to say, or to give context to the board's difficult decision. And that's just one example from one of these cities of the many important local stories that are no longer being told by reporters who really know them. Like Mario said, there has to be a better way.
After the conference, we spoke with Brian Gibson, president of Unifor Local 2000, who spoke about the positive reception that this campaign has already been receiving.
We've heard actually a lot of support, local businesses, local politicians even. And I know that our folks as journalists were concerned about, being independent. And it's like, well, no, but these are donated to the co-op cause, not the newspaper itself. So they don't have like special favors if I give you something, like that kind of thing. But we are hearing a lot of support about that. Some public too. I mean, I know the mayor of Port Moody was saying a few things a while back about the concern about losing the Tri-Cities publication, right? So we're kind of tapping onto that, and I've heard lots of talk in the communities about the need for something. Like Mario said, miss that newspaper, because these papers went online in 2023, and I think that's how it kind of fell apart, because I don't think, well, as I tell these companies, you're now competing against the New York Times and like all these places that are way, way bigger than you, and you're trying to vie for their attention, and you're just in all this noise. It's so much better to be, you know, community-focused and just be the voice of your community, right? So.
While the fundraising period of this campaign is still in its early stages, Gibson says that Unifor, as well as the journalists involved, will be out around in the community this summer promoting the Save Our Local News campaign. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. Sifting through rumors and hearsay, it was difficult to pin down hard evidence on the significance of brick and mortar music retailers, also known as record stores, in our community. This CIFA Radio correspondent slipped through the grit-laden streets to interview representatives of the two remaining record stores in our community of Prince George, Clayley Tenay. One of the two, Sunrise Records, is part of a chain, so isn't really a local record store. And also, they didn't respond to my email. This narrowed down our options to exclusively cover the one remaining brick-and-mortar record store, Second Thoughts Buy and Sell, a location that nearly every musician in town frequents, or at least knows of. Tucked beneath the stretching shadows of a downtown parking garage, I stood across the street in its cool shade, where I could see a city bus pull away and reveal this gem sandwiched between the layers of cement. Who is this character? Larry Prasad, proprietor of a physical media distributor. What kind of person operates within the parameters of the free market to provide analog formats of audio, both new and previously loved pressings of every genre? I entered. There, the reclusive but brilliant Larry Prasad presided over a cash register and declined to be interviewed.
How are you feeling so far, Larry? No comment. All right.
Yes, this is all I could get on record of this local gifted curator of music, Larry Prasad. However, there was a lone bystander available within the retail space willing to speak.
Andrew Marinus, M-A-R-I-N-U-S.
Andrew and I spoke while Larry shrank away from eye and ear contact behind the cash register.
Where are we today, Andrew?
We're in Second Thoughts, downtown PG. Best store in the city, I would say.
Oh, what kind of store is it?
Secondhand media store. So music, DVDs, records, books about music and movies and so on. It's a nice cultural center for any of the local musicians, anyone who's a movie fan, looking for things that you don't often find on the shelves.
What do you think the role of a record store is in the Prince George community? What do you think, what kind of a gap does this kind of place address?
The gap of knowledge. Like, there's so many excellent bands out there that people just don't hear about, and the proprietor of such a store, they have the knowledge that you can come in and ask, hey, I love this album, this band member, can you recommend something? And Larry absolutely can. Larry's helped me find a lot of bands and whole genres that I didn't know about a few years ago, so another reason to come on down. The bands Spoon and Hot Ship I both found here through high recommendations of Larry, and every single album that I've heard from either of them, just loving intensely.
what do you think is the importance of physical media and a place that sells records in this era of online streaming and digital music and the non-physical medium, which is so popular right now?
It's always worth having your own copy of something that you love, because the streams are not always reliable.
What was your favorite find in your experience at Prince George Record Stores?
It is a hard question. I mean, I first encountered LCD Sound System through here, Corner Shop, the band, through here. Happy Mondays, discovered just in the last few months, and loved their album Bummed. That's great post-punk, funk, psychedelic funk. The discoveries keep on coming. That's why I keep on coming back.
Thanks for your time, Andrew. I appreciate it.
I was stonewalled, but I had it on good authority that Mr. Prasad would be DJing an exclusive vinyl collection at Deadfall Brewing the very next Saturday after Second Thought's buy and sell closed. There, at the brewery, I could ensnare Mr. Prasad with my audio cables and coerce him to articulate the value of his efforts to the community and its music scene. After all, no one could say it better than him. Though Andrew did a heck of a job standing in for him. With 5 days until the event, I had to think. Sorting through the store's vintage array of media playing devices, I processed the gravity of where I was. In a record store. This one, here, in the now, the present. If Prasad didn't want to talk, perhaps a proprietor of a record store past may be willing to chat. While I filled the time in between, I learned that Second Thoughts had been operating for well over a decade, and at one point faced competition in this small but cutthroat independent record store economy. Yes, before Second Thoughts secured the corner on the independent record store market locally, another record shop opened in 2006 by the name of Meow Records. It, too, slung beats in physical formats to musical enthusiasts all over the community. Despite the store closing after she made her way south, we managed to track down one of the store's former co-owners, now relocated in Vancouver, British Columbia, and reeled them in over the line to speak of this now shuttered, yet storied, retail environment.
So my name is Brindis Ogmundson. Currently, I am a governance office manager for the Provincial Real Estate Association. I was an owner-operator of Meow Records in Prince George from 2006 to 2010.
In the landscape of Prince George, BC, where do you think a record store fits into the culture and fabric of a community? What role should it fill within, say, the Prince George community?
So I think, right, it's going to be more than just selling the goods. I think record stores provide that opportunity to meet other like-minded individuals. And, you know, you gush over your love of random 10 inches or whatever, talk about the band coming to town, learn about new music and kind of make those connections, even if it's just briefly. Overall, though, I think it kind of depends on who's running the store. So some owners, like the way I did, I took the opportunity to use my store as just another venue in the community. So having that extra space is like a benefit to the local scene. But not all owners will do that, and that's totally fine. Like, as people, we're not the same. I like having a lot of people around. I like coming up with and planning events. Not everybody is like that. So when I had my store, I took the opportunity where I could to support what was going on in the scene. We had so many music shows going on all the time. So I would either just help the band sell their music in the store or their tickets, or put money behind organizations like the Folk Festival, now Cold Snap, and just, like, you know, things like get the Roller Derby League going, providing that space for meetings and planning. There's just so many great things going on. So being able to support where I could as much as I could, either financially with my volunteer efforts or just even providing a space, I think that's an opportunity for where a store, whether it's a record store or any other store, can kind of help fit into that arts and culture fabric and just provide space.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
This is a C2I News Update. June is Pride Month, and a local bird enthusiast is encouraging people to not only celebrate pride in the community, but also out in nature. Massive Wagner is a local bird enthusiast passionate about teaching people about the interesting and sometimes strange life of native birds in the area. It was when she was going to school at Vancouver Island University, majoring in biology and specializing in ecology, where she found her passion for looking at animal behavior, particularly bird behavior.
We really started birding during the pandemic. Couldn't really go outside and do things, so, you know, you can do this in your backyard, and I really got into it. So went from knowing no birds to about like 200 overnight. And I'm definitely not a pro by any means. The title is more just to get people out with me, but I am pretty good about all the birds in the area. So
Wagner has been offering bird walks through the city of Nanaimo for about a year. During the walks, she showcases the different species of birds in the area for interested community members and already established bird watchers, also known as birders. CHY met with Wagner at Buttertubs Marsh Park to talk about why she wants to encourage more queer people into the hobby. As the Marsh is a bird and wildlife sanctuary, the place is a bird watcher's paradise, and where Wagner does her bird walks.
Yeah, there's a lot of red-winged blackbirds flying around. They're just all over the place. They nest in all the reeds. I can hear some common yellowthroats singing. They kind of make like a witchety, witchety, witchety call. That's about it right now. It's kind of late in the day. Right now, birding's best in the morning, but I work, so here we are. But yeah, there's definitely always like hummingbirds around. There's juncos around. There's song sparrows around. It is a great place to go birding because of the marsh.
She says about 30 different species of birds can be found in the marsh, including different types of animals, such as beavers, deer, and turtles. For Pride Month, Wagner wants to encourage more people a part of the 2SLGBTQIA+ community to try out birding for themselves.
Well, it's one of these hobbies that I feel like anyone can do. You kind of just go out in nature and look for things. And it's really kind of right now, unfortunately, like a very white person activity. Typically older too. You'll mostly see older people birding, and I really just would like to get more people out birding. It is a very accessible hobby to have. And yeah, I think that's mostly the reasons why, but I just thought it'd be nice to make more community in Nanaimo as well.
Wagner says other communities like Victoria and Vancouver have queer birding groups where members can be themselves without judgment.
I just feel like there is a need for more queer people outdoors. I feel like there's been a lot of people who feel like, you know, they can't exist in these spaces. And a lot of my friends are queer and into nature, and I kind of want to make that bubble a bit bigger. You know, I think there's kind of like a stereotype of people knitting and crocheting and baking and being queer. And I just want some like outdoor STEM people as well. And there definitely is people out in Nanaimo looking for that.
Also for Pride Month, Wagner wants to highlight the more queer side of nature.
Western gulls. We have them out here. Gulls are incredibly hard to identify, but Western gulls are known to be in same-sex relationships. You know, there's a lot of female Western gulls who only mate with males to fertilize the egg, and then they go back to their female lover, and they raise that egg together.
Wagner says she hopes during this month, people a part of the 2SLGBTQIA+ community will step out of their comfort zones and take part in new hobbies or communities that haven't already been known as queer spaces.
I think hobbies can be enjoyed by everyone at this point. Like, you know, pickleball was more of an older person sport, and now it's been really like everyone does pickleball now. And so I think birding should be the next pickleball.
For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
Today on CSK News, the Smithers Library announced last week that they are getting a new home after nearly 20 years on the search. When the town of Smithers lost two bids to fund a new $15 million library art gallery project a couple of years ago, many thought it would take another decade to see the dream of a new library realized. However, after the town acquired the current Heartstrings building, modern, spacious, at 10,000 square feet, more than twice the size of the existing library, the community is elated. Something the library board has been fundraising for more than 20 years. Wendy Wright is the library director for the Smithers Public Library and feels a sense of relief now that a future home for the library has been secured.
My name is Wendy Wright, and I'm the director of the Smithers Public Library.
Great, Wendy. We're here in your office at the current library, but what was the news that we got just a few days ago that kind of took quite a few people by surprise?
The one that's making my cheeks ache from smiling? Well, we found out from the town on Thursday night that they had purchased the Heartstrings building for a new library. So the fantastic news is something that we've been working towards here at the library, the board, the friends of the library, our volunteer fundraisers. For 17 years, we've been trying to get a larger library, a more modern, up-to-date building with the capacity we need for this incredibly popular little library here. And finally, we're going to have it.
Wendy, maybe you could tell us a little bit of the background of this journey. I used to be on the library board during a time where we were trying to acquire grant funding to the tune of $15 million to build, it was basically three projects, but to build a new library where the current one is. But those fell short. Maybe that was just one iteration, but this has been going on for a better part of 20 years. So what's some of the background of, you know, when this building was built and why it is, you know, needs to be replaced while this library here in Little Smithers needs a bigger home?
Sure. So this is a centennial building. It was built in 1967 and it has been added on to twice. Now, we are actually one of the highest per capita public libraries in BC. We're incredibly busy. In fact, even with, for example, our book club sets, not only do we have the highest usage of any BC community, but our usage is higher than the second and third busiest combined. We're an incredibly busy little library. I think that says a huge amount about our community here. We really are a community of readers and of learners. And this building has been added on to twice just to try to keep up with the demand for space. But having said that, it still isn't big enough. If you come to our baby time, toddler time, special children's programs, some of our special events that we hold for adults and general audiences, you'll see that we can't fit everyone in. And if you browse the aisles, you'll notice that the only way we can fit all the books in is to have incredibly high, narrow aisles of shelves that people can't reach the top, they can't reach way down to the bottom. Whenever we do a report to see which books aren't circulating as well, without fail, they're the ones on the top and bottom shelves. It has nothing to do with the poor authors whose books happen to land there, because if we move them around, people borrow them, but no one can reach them. In fact, in certain aisles, you can't even see them because of the glare off the spines when they're right up under the lights. So we really need to spread out the collection. Now, there was an engineering firm hired around, I think it was 2009 or 2011, and they crawled all over the building trying to decide, would it be wiser to tear it down and start anew or expand the current building? And they gave their expert opinion as this building is really close to its end of life. It makes more sense to build a new building. So we've gone through three different plans before this recent news of new buildings that we've tried to raise funds for. The first one was a campaign called Space Light Literacy. It was for a standalone library on this same property. And unfortunately, it was being fundraised for at the same time as the second sheet of ice. And everyone recognized that for a small town, there is no way you can have two major fundraising projects happening at the same time and come up with enough funds. So the library board decided to put this new project on hold till the second sheet of ice was built. The next time, it was a vision of having a whole bunch of organizations, including CICK, all under one roof up at Central Park. So there was going to be the radio station, the library, the art gallery, the museum, and the Chamber of Commerce. And when we put all that together, we figured with the parking that you'd need, it would just be a building and a parking lot, and an enormous price tag. And there really wasn't a lot of public support for that because it would be huge and expensive. And so we went back to the drawing board and we came up with a new library gallery project, which included a beautiful do-over of a park and a cenotaph being moved up to a more prominent position. And that was gorgeous. But the town applied for two major grants to try to get that off the ground, and neither of those applications were successful. And that was $15.7 million, that project. So it was just a really, really smart move on behalf of the town to look at heartstrings and say this would make a perfect library. And we have to give credit to Nicole Chernish, who is the manager of the Smithers Art Gallery, because she was the one with the bright idea of looking into that and seeing whether that was a possibility. She suggested it to the library. The library board chair went to the town and said, hey, have you ever considered this? And many months later, we got this fantastic surprise, great news on Thursday night that the town has purchased the Heartstrings building for the library, and Heartstrings will be downsizing and moving into a smaller building on Main Street.
Thank you so much, Wendy. We'll stay tuned for more updates on the new library. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.